Please open your Bibles, if you will, to Numbers chapter 13 this evening. I want to speak on a subject this evening that I trust will be an encouragement to all that are here this evening. My title for the sermon this evening is Renewing Our Courage. Renewing Our Courage. As I've traveled through the Anabaptist community in the last number of years, there's been something that has impacted me as I have been in touch with leaders, I have been in touch with members, various people in our communities, and there has been, I think, a thread that has touched me numerous ways at numerous times. And that is that I have sensed a tiredness in life. At times, a tiredness in holding up the faith. Simply, almost as if wilting under attack. And this sermon this evening is meant to re-inspire, reignite, re-energize us in our Christian life, picking up a new vision of what God would help us to do. And I want to give, throughout the evening, I want to give us 5 points that will help us in life doing that. But before I do that, I want to introduce to you a character and read some of what happened in history here in this book of Numbers in chapter 13. Beginning to read in verse 17, Moses sent out them to spy the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward and go into the mountain and see the land that what it is and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. And what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, what the cities they be that they dwell in, whether they in tents or in strongholds, what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, be of good courage and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. Dropping down to verse 23, and they came unto the brook of Eshcol, cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. Dropping down to verse 26, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron, and to all the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey. This is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people and said, before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. And now we have the response, and the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we are. But they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land which through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So as far as I've chosen to read in chapter 13 is finished. But I look here into this, and there is something that speaks and ministers to my heart as I look into this passage. Here we have a man of courage who was one of the spies that had gone to look into the land of Canaan, and we have his perspectives. But then we have the perspectives of 10 others, and Joshua at this point is hardly mentioned, but I ask you a question. If you would have been one of these 12 spies, what would have been your take of what you saw? Now, there was some interesting things that they saw. I have never seen grapes the size of what they carried out of there. It says they had them on a staff between the two of them.
That must have been a tremendous cluster. I don't think, despite Oregon's fruitfulness, I don't think you have grapes like that here.
At least I've had no one talk, tell me about it if you do. So there must have been a tremendous cluster of grapes. That was typical of the fruit of Canaan. And, wow. But, nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. The cities are walled. Very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. There you have it. There's things there that just look too big for us. And then when Caleb gets up and says, "We be well able. Let's go up there. Let's go up at once. Possess it, for we be well able to overcome it." Now we look. Now we have the contention that begins to grow between the two reparts. The disagreement. We be well able. We be not able. We saw the giants. And we be... God's going to be with us. God's going to take care of us. You look into chapter 14 and the contention grows and the thing gets really moving along pretty good here in chapter 14. But we look at it and we see what is happening. Caleb was looking at this through the eyes of faith. You realize tonight that we have in life, there are many obstacles that face us, and there are times when simply life rolls over us. We simply are overwhelmed by the situations that face us, and we simply lose our courage. And I've sensed that in many, many people, and it has happened to me as well. And therefore, as I look into this passage, I want to pick out some of the reasons why there was such a difference. Joshua and Caleb, the two that were giving a good report, they kept their eyes on God, they kept their perspective on God, their faith was on God, whereas the other ten were looking at what they saw and left God out of the equation. Now tonight, in the United States, if you look at the condition of our nation and leave God out of that equation, there is no way there will be survival. But when you put God into the equation, the whole thing shifts. Because at that point, God is the God of the impossible. And He would like to take over at the point in time when things look hopeless. God steps in, picks up, and does what He plans to do, what He wants to do, brings about His means, His purposes, in spite of rulers that would work against Him, rulers that would have no heart for God whatsoever. Yet God is able to, in the middle of all of that, to bring about His purposes and plans. And that, to me tonight, is thrilling. In fact, the chills are running up and down my back right now to think about it. And I believe tonight that every one of us needs to get a hold of those principles. Let's go now into the book of Joshua, where Caleb reflects and he's giving his side of the story. This is 45 years later. 45 years later. You know, the ones that said we can't make it, when God finally came onto the scene and talked to them, He came right down and He said, "Look," His cloud came. He said, "This thing's over with. You folks aren't going up there. You said your children were afraid. What's going to happen to our children?" God said, "I'm going to take your children in, but you're not going in. You're all going to die here." And the only two that survived that were Joshua and Caleb, because they were the two faithful men. And now 45 years have gone, and now we have Joshua talking. And as Joshua talks here, in his testimony, he gives us five keys to his life that I think are five keys for our lives here tonight. And I would like to bring them into focus, and I want to leave you out early tonight, Saturday night. I don't want to push you late tonight, so we want to move through this pretty fast. In chapter 14 here of Joshua, we look at what Joshua had to say, beginning in verse 6. "Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, 'Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me to thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I then, when Moses the servant of the Lord sent me unto Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in my heart. My friend, when you are discouraged and you are down and out, check your heart. Check your heart. What did Caleb do? He said, I brought word as it was in my heart. Discouragement starts in the heart many, many times. Something down inside. Caleb, when he looked and when he gave testimony here, I said it as it was in my heart. His heart was right before God. He had his courage because his heart was in the right place. Far too many times and so often in my own life, when things are getting me down, I'm looking at the wrong thing. My heart is in the wrong place. Joshua and Caleb, they were not looking at the giants in that way. They were looking at their God. They had a small faith in a big God. And you and I tonight do not need to have a big faith. All we need is a small faith in a big God. But if we misplace our faith, and we have our hearts set on the things of the world and our eyes on that, we're going to lose sight of God. We're going to lose our courage. But Caleb said, I said it as it was in my heart. And it's very clear. Let's look in the New Testament. There's a scripture in the New Testament that just points this out. Matthew chapter 12, beginning to read in verse 34. O generation of vipers, who has warned, how can ye being evil speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, every idle word that man shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, by thy words thou shalt be condemned. What do we say? We say what's in our heart. You realize tonight that when Caleb said, I said it as it was in my heart, because his heart was in the right place. He was thinking of the right things. He was looking at God in the right way. That's why he could say what he could. When you and I become discouraged and we are down and out and life is rolling us over and we don't know what to do with life, it's because we haven't watched our heart closely enough. We've gotten ourselves off of track. We're looking at the wrong things. What's in your heart today? The first place to start to check. Let's read on in chapter 14 of Numbers of Joshua here. Verse 8. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the hearts of the people to melt. But I wholly followed the Lord. The second thing. His heart was right. But not only was his heart right, he said, I wholly followed the Lord. I did what God said me to do. I said what God said me, told me to do. I wholly followed the Lord. And tonight, I believe that's the second thing we need to think about. If the heart is right, and we follow our heart in obedience to God, it will pick us out of the dumps of despair and discouragement. And Caleb, as he looked into his heart, he said, I wholly followed the Lord. I don't have any regrets of what happened 45 years ago on that day. I wholly follow the Lord, and I have survived until this day. What a blessing for him to have that testimony. He said, I have fully followed the Lord. And I think that is the second thing we need to do. There are many today that would believe or would profess to believe in God, but would not want to obey in completion. To have a profession, but not to follow, is hypocrisy and will not bring power into the life of the believer and will bring about discouragement. There are many today that major in worship but minor in obedience. That was the problem of Saul the king. He was a great man of worship. Yeah, let's go worship. Honor me now among the people that we may go and worship. But what was his problem? He would not obey. There are many today that while they have a tremendous word profession, they will be involved in worship. But when it comes to obedience,
It really doesn't matter if the Scripture says this. I'm not going to do that. It's not convenient for me. I don't like what it says. I don't like how it feels. But I do like to worship. We are having many today that would profess Christ that are majoring in the issue of worship today, but are totally disregarding obedience. And it's a burden to me today that how many that are majoring in worship, and the more they major on worship, the more they can push aside clear Scripture, like the principle of the headship bend, and other principles like that, equally clear. Just sort of push them aside. And as they seem to become more spiritual, those issues of obedience just sort of fade away until their life becomes secondary. And there are many today in following that path that are on the deep water, in the deep waters of compromise, lulled to sleep by that issue of worship, that God would accept their worship, but they're laying aside the issues of obedience and discipleship. God help us today. Jesus, in speaking to the Pharisees, said, "You make them twofold more of the child of hell." And I believe the warning to us today is that discipleship and obedience needs to be a very intricate part of our Christian life. Worship is important. We should be there for worship. Worship should be a very vital part of our Christian life. But obedience is the follow-up of that worship. And God cannot accept the incense of our worship if our obedience is not there. Samuel, in speaking to Saul, said, "Has the Lord as great delight in sacrifice as in obedience? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams." You see what he's saying? That is the balance of obedience and worship. And Caleb had it down pat. He said, "My heart's there. I followed God. I wholly followed God. I have obeyed God in my heart." Therefore, his courage was there because he was a disciple, not only in word, but also in deed. Verse 4. Verse 9, "And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and the children and thy children forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God." What is this here that is just that Caleb is looking at? He's looking at the promise. And that to me is the third thought that I want to bring to bear tonight. There is the issue of, as we mentioned, there is the issue of what's in your heart. There's the issue of obedience. And then there's the third issue. And that is claiming the promise. God has given to us, His people, a promise. Many promises in the Scriptures, in fact. Let's just look at some of them. Let's look at one in the book of Romans, I believe it is. Romans chapter 8. We just pick up a number of principles, a number of promises here. Verse 28, we all know it. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to His purpose. All things work together for good to them. Wait a minute. I have known things happening in my life when I have been obedient, I have been in the spirit of worship, I have been following my heart. It doesn't feel good. Is it good? One of the perspectives we need to keep in mind is, as a disciple of Jesus Christ, our happiness on earth is not necessarily our call. You realize that? For the Christian, earthly happiness is not necessarily God's divine plan for our life. What is submission to His will. As a result, we need to realize that we are disposable in the hands of our God. What was Peter going to do when he's sitting in prison, knowing that the man wants to take his head the next day? He wasn't wasting a lot of time. The Bible tells us he was laying between the keepers sleeping.
What was it? He realized he was in perilous danger, but he was getting his rest. He's like, these guys are going to watch, I might as well flee. So the keepers were there watching. He went to sleep. And the angel came and got him out. He thought he was in a dream. God rescued him right out of the middle of all that. But you know what? He was perfectly resigned that he is disposable. It's a concept that sometimes I think we forget. We'd like to look at the happenings in life and we say, wait a minute, you know, this doesn't feel good to me. Where's God in all of this? But mark it down, God has a plan, He has a purpose, He has ways to do that. And if in taking our life, if our life is to be a sacrifice, even to the point that we lose our life, does not mean that we are outside the plan of God. We look, all things work together for good to them that love God. Now this is a difficult thing for us to do, to commit ourselves to that point, to the plan of God. And then we have another verse here. Let's go down to verse 31. What shall we say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? Though the situations and happenings of life may seem like things are just going wrong. Everything is tipsy-turvy, however you say that. Everything is just heading in the wrong direction. Does that mean that God has forsaken us? No. If God be for us, who can be against us? Dropping down to verse 33. Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? It is God that justifies. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea, rather that is risen from the dead, even is at the right hand of God, who maketh intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Living in a day of persecution, these people were. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. God's love for us is never shortened. It is always there. It will continue on, though the circumstances of life may not seem that way. We may not understand what is happening. Yet it is very clear as we look into the promises of God continue on. He will not leave us. He will not forsake us in all of it. God is still there. God has not forgotten His people. Never has, never will forget His people in the midst of their trials and their tribulations. But what we need to remember that are times when our lives are disposable in the hands of our Creator. He has a bigger plan and He would like to use even the death of His people at times to further His purposes. And you know what? Our suffering brethren in various nations tonight have a clearer picture of that than we do. They absolutely do. That is why you can have those 15 Egyptian Christians that were captured by the ISIS in last January, that were beheaded. Their families didn't know what was happening to them until they saw the figures on the internet, saw the beheadings on the internet. Some of them said, we didn't know where our families were until where these men were until we saw them there. And we saw what happened. And some of those men, just before their heads were taken, they were saying into their language, as it could be seen on the video, that Jesus, they're faithful to Jesus. And their families, while they saw the martyrdom of their own loved ones, were standing back and rejoicing that they were faithful in the day of death. Would that be us? Would that be us? We look at the circumstances of life and we chafe under those things. Joshua here was claiming the promises of God. Despite what happens to his people, however cruel life may seem, and how the circumstances may roll over us at times, and we're totally out of control, the promises of God are still true. God will not forsake his people. He will be ever near, ever close, walking by our side in the day of trouble, in the day of need. Going back to the book of Joshua, we pick up another thought. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, verse 10, as he said these 45 years, even since the Lord spake his word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, and yet I am this day as strong as I was in the day that Moses sent me, as my strength was then, So is my strength now for war, both to go in and to go out. What do we need to do here? Review the acts of God. That's what Caleb did. He reviewed the promises of God. He claimed the promise. He looked at those promises and reviewed the promise. God said, "He's going to give me the land. I want it. Time has come." But now he reviews the acts of God in his life. God has kept me for 45 years. I don't know who you are tonight, and I don't know your life situation, but I think it's important for every one of us to roll back the time and to look into our own past and see what God has done in our past that we can point to His hand of care and keeping. I would say tonight that if we think carefully and we sit back and reflect, that probably every one of us can reflect something very personal that God did. And we look back and say, God's hand was there in that moment. And Caleb reflected on that, and he said, in the last 45 years, God has kept me. God has kept me. And as you look into the Scriptures, you will find over and over again where God had intervened for His people. Let's look at some of those. Let's go to the book of Daniel. These are some of my favorite stories. I talked last night about the importance of Bible stories. And Daniel chapter 3, it's one of my... We have Daniel chapter 3, we have Daniel chapter 6. We're going to look at both of those tonight just briefly. We have the three Hebrew children in Daniel chapter 3. I'm so blessed with this story. From my childhood, I've been blessed with this story. These three men were being challenged. Worship this idol. And they said, we're not going to worship him. We're not going to do it. We're not careful to answer you, O king. Now, this was world king. This was the world ruler. You don't talk back to a man like that. Well, they said, look, king, we're not going to do it. Oh, yeah, you're not going to do it. All right. We're going to put you in the fire. And so they throw him into that furnace. But they said, we're not going to do it. Just be aware, king. We're not going to worship. Our God is able to deliver us. But whatever happens, we're not going to bow down to this thing. Okay, all right, in you go. And into the fire they go. They didn't know if they were going to be delivered. I think they were just ready to die if necessary. Into the fire they go. And the king's eyes get big and wide because not three, but four men are walking through that fire. God showed him that day. And the men came out. They got the men out. I don't know how in the world, in the curiosity of that fire, he ever got his voice to be heard in there. Those men came back out. It didn't smell like smoke. Not a hair of singed, I think it said. What a word. I thrill of that story. God keeping his people. Let me have chapter 6. You know the story. Daniel in the lion's den. How exciting for children to hear the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And Darius, now this is a different king, but he's a world power. He took over from the Chaldean kingdom, and now the word means that the Persians are in, and Darius is there, and Daniel survived that change of empire. And there is Daniel, and by this time he's an aged man, and it seems like Darius had taken a liking to him. And it tells us here in chapter 6, in verse 16, I believe it is, yes. Let's just look at it. Chapter 6. Let me confirm that verse. As Darius, in chapter 4, in verse 14, Darius, he's so sorry that he made that degree of worship, foolishly made that, but he can't turn it back because the Medes and the Persians can't change their laws. And so he's looking to the going down of the sun. How it is at Daniel 3 in verse 14. And then we have verse 16. And Darius comes to the king, and I'm sure he's like, he doesn't know what to say to his friend. Because of his own foolishness that his friend is going to be put into the lion's den. And he says to Daniel, thy God, whom thy servant continually, thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. Darius is stating something. We don't hear Daniel saying that. Daniel is put down into the lion's den. Did Darius really have faith? We see the next morning when he comes. in chapter 6, verse 20. When he came, this is Darius, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? He said in verse 16, your God's able to do it. But Daniel didn't say that he would. Didn't seem that Daniel confirmed it. And then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. How would you feel about your king if he threw you into the lion's den, even if you survived it? O king, oh, you mean old bean, why'd you put me down in here? That's what Daniel said. He said, O king, live forever. It was like he had no grudges on this whole thing. Yeah, you put me down into the lion's den. O king, live forever. And then he says these gracious words, my God has sent his angel, shut the lion's mouth, that they may not hurt me. For as much as before him is innocent, me was innocent before him, innocency was found in me. And also before thee, O king, I've done no hurt. I'm not cursing you in my heart because of what you've done. I'm not feeling bad about this against you. God is honored and has kept me alive. That must have been quite a night. Now, I like animals, but I have been around lions enough to know that while there may be times they look a little friendly, I have seen those eyes get hard in an instant. I mean, they can be laying there and it looks like they're just sleeping. There's nothing going on. But all it takes is a certain movement in which they think, and just like that eye gets hard, and it puts the shivers down your back. I've seen it. That's the life. I'm not sure what kind of night Daniel had down there. Those lions were probably pacing. They were hungry. Oh, they were pacing back and forth. I suppose they were pacing back and forth. What was Daniel? There wasn't any easy chair down there for him to sit on. What was he going to do? Where was he going to sit? Did he sleep? I don't know what he did. Might have been a long night down there. Those animals pacing around, looking at him, wishing they could eat him, but they couldn't get him. That day he comes out of that lion's den. God kept him. There are many times when God keeps his people. There are things that we can look back to. Let me give you a few stories of things that God has happened, did for me. Just things that have meant a lot to me. And let me tell you this story. I told the school children this story the other morning. Can you mind listening to it again? There was a time when I was in Kisumu and things were getting rough. This happened fairly frequently that there would be riots and political unrest in the city of Kisumu. And I remember on this particular day when things were getting really rough, we thought they might get rough. But early, usually things didn't start till about 9 o'clock in the morning. I had something I wanted to do outside of town, and I thought I could get outside of town, do my thing, come back to town, be back in town before 9 o'clock, is what I told you. I went out and did my thing, met with the church brother, as I recall. I think it was one of the local pastors there, and was coming on the way back to town, and I was thinking things would be clear. And as I was approaching town, I thought I saw a police check ahead of me. That was very common. Police would barricade the roads and you would stop. They would check your insurance on your vehicle and ask you where you're going or whatever. Depending on what their mood was, what they would look at. Sometimes they just wave you through. Well, on this particular day, I thought that's what I saw. I pulled aside thinking that I wasn't quite sure what I was seeing. And then determined, I think it's a police check. I pulled out onto the road and continued on into town. And as I was getting closer, I saw I had made a mistake. By that time, it was too late to turn around. The side of the street was lined with the thugs, the street gangs. They had put up a roadblock. In the absence of the police weren't out that yet, not early that morning yet, and so they were having a great time of collecting illegal fees so they could fund their crimes.
What was I going to do? Every driver was going to have to stop. And all you had to do is reach in your pocket and give them a ride, and they had a barricade there.
All you had to do, I knew all I'd have to do is reach in my pocket, and I wouldn't miss the 200 shillings, the $3 to give them that. That'd be just okay, wouldn't it?
They just let me roll through. But I didn't. My conscience wouldn't let me do it. And so I'm sitting there and I'm counting my options. And I noticed that their roadblock was really sort of flimsy. I mean, they had a jungle pool laying from this side of the road up across the rock and sticking up like this. And I, you know what? If they're not careful enough and they leave my... They're not in front of my vehicle at any particular time. I can pop the clutch, and I think I can get through that barricade. Well, the driver up front must have paid his whatever, and then my turn came, so I moved up to the barricade, and immediately things got a line. Well, back to my vehicle, popped open, I could hear the doors. I didn't look what was going on. I was too busy computing what was happening in front of me and around me. The water bottle on my dash disappeared, and things were flying out of my pocket, and I mean, things were just really happening fast. And meanwhile, I was still looking ahead to see if there would ever be a time when it would be. And sure enough, in a careless moment, there wasn't anybody in front. I revved the engine, popped the clutch, and burst through the barricade, and poof, I was like, ha! And then, boom, a rock came through my back windshield. While I proceeded on, I said, well, we can fix the windshield. And I got home and pulled into the compound, and I wanted to stop the engine. And I reached forward, and there were no keys. One of those, somebody in that rowdy bunch, come around and snatched the keys out of the ignition. The vehicle kept, never sputtered, never stopped, did nothing. Kept right on running. And I ran on home and did not know the keys were not in the ignition. Till I pulled in the compound and one of them stopped for me. Does God watch over his people? He does. Even when we don't. It's a very special thing to me because in that moment I realized that God had kept me. Because there was nothing better that those people would have loved than to have that vehicle stop right there, drop a little gas into it, throw a match, and make a statement that will last the rest of the day. That's what they would have loved to do. But that vehicle didn't stop. I suppose somebody back there had a set of keys in their hand. I got home and it was overwhelming to realize that what had happened. What a blessing. Then there was a time here in the United States. This happened here. And God will do the same kind of thing here. It was on a Sunday evening, and we had been visiting friends on a Sunday evening. I was the preacher at their church, and we had been at their place for supper. Now we were on the way to church. We were following them to church. As we were going, their vehicle was passing along, and we were fairly close behind them, and there was a mountain. Now, you'd call it a hill. It's not rocky. It was a hill, although we call it a mountain, coming right down to the side of the road, the steepness of it, and the woods was right down to the edge of the road, and the people, and we were following them, going to church, and all of a sudden, out of that woods, pops a little bicycle with a boy on it, right between us. I mean, I just had enough time to see him come. There was no time for contemplation. I just ripped the wheel to the left. No time for braking. The only choice was to see if we could get around him before he comes too far out. I looked back into my rearview mirror, and there lay a crumpled bike with a boy on it. And I jammed the brake stop and went back, afraid of what I would find. And then that little scared boy pulled himself out from under that bicycle, basically unscratched. I just prayed, wow, God really spared us this day. God did it. God did it. And I look back at those things and over again, I look back into things that happened, and you can too. If you think back to things that God has done in your life where His hand was there, don't take those things lightly. God's feelings in your life, There's a purpose. We tend to forget those things. But I think it's important for us to sit down every once in a while
and just review what God has done for us in the past. That's what Caleb did. He said, God has kept me these 45 years. Today I'm 60. And I look back. I have 60 years to look back on and to reflect what God has done and how He has delivered me over and over and over again. Story after story I could give. We're quitting early tonight. Really, we are. Let's go to the fifth thing. Go back to the book of Joshua. I want to pick up the fifth and last point. Joshua chapter 14, beginning to read in verse 12. Now therefore, give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Amalekites were there. The cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord has said. Now we said, one of the earlier points we were, review the promises of God, but now I bring you to the next of the last point. Claim the promises of God. Make them personal. Make them personal. To review the promises of God and think they're for someone else will do you no good. But make them personal. That's what Caleb did. He said, God promised them to me. I'm 85 years old. God has kept me. Give me your mountain. I want to take it. Let me move in. That's the promise that God has given to me. Let me move ahead. Let me take it. That's the call that God has for us tonight. His promises are true. They're real. Pick up the courage. Claim the promise. Make it personal. Move ahead in your life, looking beyond the circumstances that would take us down. Pick up your courage. Lift up your eyes above the present circumstance. Keep your eye on God and move forward in life and let Him do what He would like to do in your life. Ring the bell that God has called you to ring. My friends, tonight, that's the message I want to leave you with tonight. And I trust that as we look at those issues and we look at our own life and the things that could possibly overwhelm us and take us down, if we can just pick up what God would have us to do and have the vision that He has for us, and pick up the priorities and the purposes that He has for us, we can be re-energized for the kingdom of God. Let's stand for a word of prayer. Brother Jason, would you come forward and lead us in a closing word of prayer?